Thanks for listening to The Regime. This is at 102.7 FM, Radio Waterloo. I am in Kitchener, southwestern Ontario, Canada. And with us, via WhatsApp in Mexico, a former programmer and an expat at this point, left during the pandemic, is Vin Maru. Thank you so much for coming on The Regime tonight. How are you?
I'm doing well, Yenny. Thank you for having me on. It's been a while since we've chatted.
Yeah, it has been. I know you via the radio station, but I know that you have a vast past with your your business background, and I know you are well established. And really, when you were in the radio, that was more of almost a hobby for you. So, do you want to introduce yourself and tell us more about you, and then we can delve in why you left Canada for Mexico?
Sure. Well, I was born in India, and it was known as Bharat, but came to Canada when I was a few years old. I grew up in Canada, westernized, all that sort of thing. And went to university, grew up in Kitchener-Waterloo, which is how we met there. You know, my roots were there, my parents are there. Went to university, you know, lived in Toronto for quite a while. Worked in the media industry, web and multimedia development, early days of the tech boom. Got out of that when the bust happened. Got into kind of finance, just learning, self-learning things. Caught on to the precious metals market in about 2004, and it was still early stages for what they call a bull market. So if there's a trend that's going to happen for 7-8 years in a certain sector, you know, they usually last for quite a while. And so learned a lot about gold, and in doing that, learned a lot about the finance system, how capital is raised in Canada, the U.S., how companies go public. Over the years, I met another gentleman who turned out to have Canada's largest financial website. Through him, started writing a newsletter, started speaking at some of the conferences, and then the resource sector peaked out probably like around 2012. And by 2013, I realized Canada was going to legalize cannabis. I jumped into the cannabis industry, started talking about the investment business opportunities there, participated at spoke at conferences, had my own business in the space, selling equipment, learned a lot about it. And then obviously, you know, the pandemic came, businesses were just getting shut down, slowed down. A gentleman who I met in Acapulco, probably about 12 years ago, reconnected with me again during the pandemic, and he was going to be working on a real estate project in Mexico. Thought I'd be interested in coming down there, and I looked at it, and I thought, yeah, this is very interesting. It was with my old business partner, we were going to do it, and then I just kind of made the decision. I guess this would now be in the summer of 2021, I started looking at Mexico, looked at what it would take to get a residency visa. Luckily, I got it through Leamington. Toronto wasn't even taking appointments, and this was in July, and they wouldn't even touch anyone till probably like October for an appointment. But I contacted the Leamington office. They had a process and a procedure to get the appointments. Met it and went to the embassy with all my documents, forms and all that filled out. Knew I had qualified. And that day, I mean, I ended up getting a temporary residency visa for Mexico. Now, what it entails is it's a 30-day visa, entry visa. I had to complete the process here. So by October now, this was early September, and by October, Canada was talking about locking the country down, travel restrictions for unvaccinated. And so I just made the decision to leave at that end of October. So in about 2 or 3 more weeks, it'll be 2 years for me living down here in Puerto Vallarta, Mexico, and enjoying it.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. I follow you on Facebook, and I kind of get to see your group and the stuff that you do. And it's really fascinating. Because it's like you're definitely delving into the the food and like what you're doing, being able to bring your own heritage, like Indian food, or I guess Bharat. I was looking at that too, how India is actually not India's name for itself, but Bharat. But then also your business experience, which today when I was preparing to talk with you, I was like, because initially, like, I'm very kind of like spontaneous person, but like following you, I'm sort of like, I had some questions, because you do talk about the world and very much like the business and like internationally. So like, actually, some of the things that I was wanting to talk about was, for example, the international corporations, how they operate outside of the law, and how, like, what is actually going on right now? Because you left Canada for Mexico, and there's a lot to do with that. But like, when you're in your forum and you're talking about like corporate laws and how they operate internationally, like, what are you talking about?
Well, there's two things there. One's me moving to Mexico and being an entrepreneur here, and that's a bit different. But I've always covered global financial picture, macro, and it really came with a deep understanding and a deep dive into the gold market. And, you know, in the past, in history, gold had been money. They got off of the gold standard, and now we have fiat. When I discovered that, you start to do a deep dive into how the financial world really operates, the banking level, and corporate level as well. And so as time goes on, even more and more in the last year or so, I've come to the conclusion that really governments don't run the world, it's corporations do. So now I happened to come across a video about a few days ago talking about how corporations have almost – large corporations, so we're talking multinational global corporations, how they have seem to have a lot more power over governments. And we see that in the Western world, but a lot of these third world emerging markets where, you know, you have corporate involvement, let's say Africa and the mining operations there, there's Canadian mining operators that work there or whatnot. Now they have, you know, there's government laws within that country, but when a corporation goes to make these billion-dollar investments into setting up mines or building ports or any of this thing, there's a governing, it's not even a governing body, it's part of the World Bank Group, and it's called the International Center for Settlements of Investment Disputes. So, for example, if a large corporation had spent lots of money operating and setting up in a specific country, and the country decided to revoke their license to operate there or was not acting in good faith, what was the ramifications, or what could the corporation do at that point? And so there's this, I guess, international tribunal, if you want to call it, that sets up and disputes these sort of challenges and issues that corporations will have in various countries. Now, the problem is when you have this corporate environment that's has more of the money and builds these things, and, you know, because the country is kind of not indebted in a way, but, I mean, it is a corporation that has set that up and is bringing value to that company. They kind of just, the countries just have to play along. Is essentially how it works. Is, you know, whatever the settlement comes out of this International Center for Settlements of Investment Disputes, which is a part of the World Bank Group, seems to what holds geopolitically around the world, and it seems like specific governments just really don't have much clout, because if they do decide to kick that corporation or repatriate those assets, then they lose all possible future funding or investment into that country. So it's a bit of a catch-22. It's not like the corporations 100% control the world in a way, but they almost do. I mean, you look at the U.S. and Canadian politics, it's especially the U.S., it really is corporate donors that are dictating policy via the politicians. So in a way, I kind of do believe corporations are now controlling the world, the biggest of them have a concentration of power, and that just seems to continue to expand and grow.
Yeah, it definitely seems to be the state of the world. I guess this is what globalism is, right? Back in the day, I suppose they talked about globalism and we didn't really know what it was going to look like, but it's beyond government's grasp or control. And then even some of the things about, for example, the World Health Organization or even the United Nations stipulations, where it seems like sovereign nations somehow supposedly don't have their rights when it comes to decisions that are being made by the UN, for example. So,
yeah, but you got to remember these UNs. There's charter member countries. I think a lot of them are all playing along, because that's just the way the system is set up. And when you have a network of central banks, each country has its own central bank, and they pretty much are all coordinated with each other. And it really comes under, you know, part of the World Bank or Bank of International Settlements, and that's how they, you know, settle funds between countries and whatnot. So it really comes to is these, they're all kind of all on the same plan. And globalism, I initially would have thought it's such a bad thing. But through globalism over the last 30, 40 years, humanity probably has prospered just as much equally. In terms of international trades, not having to worry about shipping lanes. That was really what a lot of these organizations had been set up to do. But in becoming that sort of superpower and control, you know, absolute power corrupts absolutely, I think. And we're just at a point right now where they've really corrupted themselves in many ways. And it's, I don't know where the agenda goes in this whole thing, whether there's a cohesiveness between them all, but obviously we're starting to see countries that are not following along with the global agenda. And globalism to me is almost reinventing itself. I'm not gonna say it's gonna collapse, but it'll definitely reinvent itself over this coming decade. And we see it with the rise of BRIC nations, that's Brazil, Russia, India, and China, but their membership base is probably going to grow significantly. In fact, a lot of these countries that normally are not really 100% entrenched in the Western system, and I call them more emerging markets, you know, they've got an option now to work with the BRICS alliance. And it's an economic alliance more than a military alliance. I mean, NATO and all that, that was more of the military side of things. So
yeah.
I just think there's a global power shift happening. It's getting evenly distributed more and more as we see. So this concentration of the West global power structure is kind of meeting some challenges, and the world is we're no longer accepting it as is. I mean, India has actually been fairly outspoken about certain things that's happening in the West, in Canada in particular recently. So I just kind of see globalism is shifting. Mexico is an interesting place. I'm here and I'm starting to see a lot of what they call nearshoring. So Mexico is increasing its manufacturing base significantly. A lot of it's moving from China because we have the North American Free Trade Agreement. It's been rewritten to another agreement. But, you know, to the north of Mexico, you have the biggest trading partner, and then all of Latin and South America, which is emerging markets. These are emerging markets. They call it that because the middle class is going to be entering a phase where they're higher earners and they will have more disposable income. The West, the pyramid, or the fundamentals for the demographics of the West aren't really too favorable right now. It's more the emerging markets that are really going to see some amazing growth over the next 15, 20 years, and that's what really excites me to be down here in Mexico. This would be like coming to Canada when you're in the, you know, in the 70s or something like that.
Wow. I know, right? I feel like the West has just been focusing on warfare and accumulation, and then sort of didn't think about the fact that other countries could kind of start you know, negotiating on their own and still being great business, because there's more people in the world than just North America.
No, absolutely. I mean, North America, Canada, U.S., the Western countries, so that would also include England, Australia, and a lot of the European countries. They've had this phenomenal control over global politics and power for quite a while, and we're just starting to see a challenge to that. Now, how that plays out, whether that actually goes to a physical war, is to be seen. It wouldn't be a smart on their end to do that or engage in that, but, you know, what we're seeing with Ukraine and Russia, and then, mm-hmm. you know, China becoming the next villain in this, it just never ends.
I know.
So, I don't know how that all will play out long term, but mm-hmm. really, when you start getting a few superpowers, it's one thing for the West and the U.S. to go into a country like Afghanistan or Iraq or any of the other countries they've invaded in the last 20, 30 years, let alone Vietnam and all the other ones. But now they're actually getting, they've knocked off the small countries or the small issues, what they want to deal with. But now they've got the bigger challenge, which is Russia and China. And you have India as a part of their economic alliance. Brazil is a part of it. South Africa, most of Africa would not surprise me if many of the countries start moving away from the French domain rule and move more towards some sort of independent status or build their own African alliance. I mean, I could see South America and Central America doing that as well. For Mexico, the best thing Mexico could do is just stay politically neutral. Don't get involved in any major geopolitical sides.
Yeah.
And in doing so, it will have an amazing opportunity to emerge even from emerging market, second world to first world status over the next 20 years. And then the demographics here favor very highly.
Yeah. Oh, you're cutting out briefly. Ooh, so talking with Vin, and he's in Puerto Vallarta in Mexico, and I'm just going to recall him again now, because...
Are we back on?
Yeah, now we're back on.
Okay, sounds good.
So, yeah, very, very, very interesting times we live in, and I've been wanting to ask you, like, how is it to live in Mexico? And, yeah, you left during the pandemic, and you're not alone. Lots of people actually ended up leaving Canada or thinking about exiting Ontario. And so you did that. And, you know, like following Canadian news or trying to find Canadian news in media and knowing that we are being actively censored on the internet. And that is not a simple reason why, really. But I mean, censoring is never a good thing, no matter what the reason is. So just even trying to make a post, and you have to kind of be a little bit cryptic and things like that. But basically just trying to connect with the world here and, you know, kind of seeing what has happened and seeing how the world is going, and knowing that for some places like in Canada and even in Australia, like the pandemic rules or the mandates were a little bit more hardcore. So that's why it's good to keep an eye out on the world, because it's like, hey, what's going on in Mexico? Because like what's normal in Canada now is not really normal in the rest of the world.
Well, and you know what? I don't think like Mexico, the president here, I've learned a little bit about him. I don't know, follow Mexican politics too much, but everything I've seen with him seems like a solid person. He didn't encourage people to get vaccinated here in Mexico by choice. There was no, and in fact, I think it was illegal for any company to force people on it. But he left the borders open, and travel and tourism was open the whole time, which really brought a lot of people to Mexico during that time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as a consequence of that,
prices have gotten very expensive here from what I'm hearing compared to like 3 or 4 years ago. So the pandemic has pushed inflation out this way as well. Maybe that might reside, but, you know, again, it's I find Mexico a very interesting place in that it's no, it's not third world by any means. Anyone's business here, even if you're not in the major tourist zones like Cancun or Cabos. I live in Puerto Vallarta. It is a tourist area. Not as well known, but it's actually an emerging area here. I think the fundamentals are really great. And Cabos and Cancun Way, that whole Quintero area, has really been developed out, but there's lots of opportunity to develop out here. And I'm starting to see actually some of the wealthiest people around Mexico and the world moving probably about a place just about an hour outside of where I am. So it's really... It's becoming a hotbed of an area, but that being said, the prices have gone up quite a bit since even since I've been here. Rents are probably 20-30%, and with the Canadian dollar's lost against the peso over the last year, so it's become quite more expensive to live down here. That's for sure.
So you've clearly started little networks and little collaborations since you've been there. So you're talking like I was just like on your one of your pages today, and you were talking about things that you want to do or that you're doing, and like local events in Puerto Vallarta, and events for tourists, and then events for locals. Like, are you you're collaborating with different places already, and like you have a network of people? Like, do you have like a little community now?
Yeah, you know, I integrated into kind of the expat community that was here, but the ones that were living full time. There's a pretty good libertarian community that was here earlier that kind of fragmented, but nonetheless, there's some great people and there are a lot of expats here. Funny enough, the ones that have expatriated out for the most part, they're very open-minded, very aware of what's going on in Western worlds and just are done with it. They want to escape it. And we seem to all have this found a solace down here and a connection. So yeah, I've been involved in the local communities and getting to know other groups and events. And, you know, having my background kind of in a business finance, I saw a bit of a niche market which hadn't really been served. And, you know, people throw events all for all sorts of reasons down here, whether it's just a regular tourism event or a gathering or whatever it is. But no one was really effectively doing anything in terms of kind of a business and networking event. So I started earlier this summer, started a Facebook group that's grown to about 1,300 members now. And it's really just called Investors and Entrepreneurs Mexico. And so I've been, yeah, I've been coordinating and hosting a few events in the summer. But I'm actually, now that the high season's coming up, I'm planning to host a weekly seminar luncheon for anyone who's a visitor vacationing in Mexico and just wants to learn the basics of what it would take to kind of move here, you know, what's involved with that, getting your, getting residency, but more importantly, what, you know, what to look for when opening a bank account, how to set up an investment account down here, because funny enough, the banks here are offering anywhere from 10 to 12% interest on money on deposit. So you can't even get a, you know, any interest out of the Canadian banks unless you put it into some term deposits, and those are generally about 5%. So, you know, having your money down here, you'll get 12%, which is nice. And so, you know, investment banking down here, real estate's a great option for people for investments, and it really hasn't gone through any busts. I mean, sometimes it slows down or whatever, but the real estate market's pretty stable here. And yeah, so, and then the business opportunities is where I actually get excited, because I see anyone can buy real estate and invest in that. That's just a typical thing. Someone who makes a permanent move and has the means to do, they would do that here. But business is really where I see the growth opportunity, because as I mentioned, we're starting to see manufacturing leave China, but come come to Mexico, but I'm also hearing companies out of Germany are looking, like Volkswagen's already here, but more other manufacturers out of Germany are picking up and moving their plants to here as a possible option, just because they have an energy crisis there. They're, you know, they don't know how long that's going to last with the Russian energy and all of that. So it seems as some of these other countries that are going to go through some geopolitical instability, Mexico seems to be a favorable location right now for it. So, yeah, you know, I get excited because I just see all these opportunities. This, you know, it's still early stages for this country to emerge out of kind of that second world status and become a first world over the next decade. Anything's possible to do what you want here, because it's just in a growth phase. So, you know, I'm just leveraging my knowledge that I've gained over 20 years of following financial markets and being an entrepreneur, working for myself my whole life, just leveraging that down here now. And doing so, you know, I ended up meeting with one of the big investment bank firms here. They had in the past hosted events for attracting new clients, and I'll be meeting with them in about a week to finalize that and maybe work with them on co-hosting events together, getting connected with other finance people in the space. So it's exciting because in Canada, everything seems to be built out. I would have been a new guy in trying to operate in industries that have been well established for a while. Mexico, the financial system is still very, very basic, and it's going to have lots of room to expand and grow. And I think I can help out in my own small way and stuff like that. So, and the other thing that really excites me is I'm also exploring a lot of my Indian roots and backgrounds and connections there that are starting to materialize, where we may be actually hosting a conference for Indian nationals to come to Mexico and look at investment business opportunities. I'm hoping to have one in a few weeks, and if that goes well, we plan to do a lot more. So I'll actually have people out of India that are interested in coming to Mexico, especially given what's going on with India and Canada right now, where
I know, right?
They're no longer issuing visas, and Justin Trudeau, I don't know what he's thinking, you know, trying to engage India, and however he's engaging them recently. But I mean, it's kind of funny that I look at his politics. He's lost all credibility around the world. He's a joke.
Yeah, he doesn't have a lot of diplomacy, that's for sure.
No.
The opposite, unfortunately, but we'll see what happens. That was going to be my next question, is what hope do you see for Canada? I feel a little bit depressed. You know, like I don't know if everybody can feel it, but like I can, because unless you're paying attention to if you're not paying attention to anything and you've been able to get through the last 3 years or so, you know, and still just hiding your head in the sand. But like, if you're not doing that, there's just this other element of, you know, like things are not all right. It's not all right.
Yeah, can you hear me okay? It's starting to cut out in and out a bit. I mean, I caught most of it, but
okay, hang on.
If you can hear me okay, I'll continue on.
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay. Hope for Canada. I actually have hope for all countries around the world. I think these are just phases that countries go through. Now, I mean, hopefully Justin Trudeau does not get elected again or run or whatever. I don't even if he's allowed to. Are they allowed to do 3 terms or who knows? But I've never voted in Canada, so I really don't know how exactly all that works.
No.
But you know, I mean, you're going to have to make the best of the situation. If you don't have the means to leave Canada, or don't even have the loyalty of ties and because of work or family or whatnot, you're going to have to go through that mental exercise of some hardship. And really, it's not just Canada, but the U.S., Australia, Western countries in general are going to go through a bit of a hardship over this coming decade. And it's part of the rebalancing. When they talk about a new world order, initially in the past, I would have thought this whole New World Order agenda is put out there, and it is. There's part of it is there, but part of the New World Order, I'm coming to realize more and more, is the acceptance that there are New World Orders uprising around the world, for example, like BRICS and all these Latin American countries and African countries. These are all emerging markets, and they're all going to have their own say. Yeah. And they may not be 100% aligned with the Western system. So the system globally is going to get revamped. And in a way, that might be a good thing. I hope they do it for the better. But the Western world seems to be implementing policies, whether it's through the World Economic Forum or corporate controls or whatever, corporate directives. They seem to want to contain and take more control from their citizens. And I actually believe the reason that's partially so is when you go through a credit collapse, which I think is what's going to happen in Western worlds over this coming decade, and most of the citizens, those countries are all indebted significantly. And I've done some research and data, just looked at it, comparing emerging markets or third world markets, let's call them, to Western worlds, and for example, I don't know the exact numbers off the top of my head, but debt per capita per Mexican citizen is only $4,000 to $6,000. So the average Mexican citizen per capita is only indebted $4,000 to $6,000. Now you take the U.S. for example, their citizens are indebted like $80,000 to $90,000, and that includes some federal government, but I don't think even those numbers are right, so it's probably significantly higher. So as a part of the global reset, you're going to have to take away the credit card from the Western citizens and corporations, because they're all going to go through some sort of a credit default as interest rates rise. These corporations' cost of service debts will rise, just as like the average Canadian or U.S. citizens' cost to service their debt is going to rise. That doesn't not usually play out well long term. So I think as a part of the global rebalancing that we're starting to see in the world, the effect is that people from Western worlds are going to feel the effects of a global reset more so than people in emerging markets who are not heavily indebted. So it's like someone who's indebted and enjoy all the luxuries of life, and you have to take away, take that away from them. They're going to feel the pain more than someone who's never really used debt and in an economic slowdown. Sure, things slow down, but I'm not leveraged on debt, and these countries will survive whatever chaos financial reset is coming. It is much easier and safer to be in these countries because they are not in debt. In fact, mortgage rates here in Mexico have always been around 8 to 10%, maybe a little less a few years ago. But right now, that's what the rate is, and that's where the Western world is getting caught up now. So I think it's just the credit cards are being pulled from the Western world, and the people are going to feel the pain the most. So if you live in Canada and you're going to go through that reset, sorry to say, you're going to have to start accepting a lower standard of living in general, because the credit cards are going to be taken away.
Those are the times.
Yeah, it is. Well, you can look at it as two ways. You can look at it as all negative, or you can look at it as a positive, in that in any reset, you do have an opportunity to come out of it the other end. And how you navigate and traverse the reset really is just going to be fuel for your endeavors going forward. If you fully are aware that this is going to happen, then it really shouldn't be come as a shock to you. And if you actually prepare for it, then you should be fine. But if you can actually think of how you can thrive and survive and do prosper from it, because as some economies blow up, other economies or sectors will flourish. So, it's just kind of a rebirth cycle, and it's really nothing new that has not been done throughout history. The Bretton Woods Accord was kind of a new, the new financial accord that we've been living on for a while with the petrodollar. That's just coming to its end of its life cycle, and that's this transition period. So, you know, had it been 2 years ago and whatnot, I would have been, oh, this is all planned. About, but now it's just come to realize sometimes this might be, it's a necessity, it's an evil. The only fact that I don't like is that it's going to concentrate more power if they start doing the central bank digital currencies and digital passport IDs and all of this. It's just going to, it's going to limit people's options. And I don't see that happening as quickly in these emerging markets. It's the Western world that will have to kind of adopt these things because they buy into it more than the emerging markets do.
Yeah, it's like it's switched. It used to be that the East was, you know, like closed off and bordered off, like in Europe, for example, with a wall. And now it's switched, and now the West has become like, you know, like propaganda and censoring. It's sort of really interesting.
Yeah. Well, in fact, you know, it's almost like you mentioned the censoring of the news and media in Canada. They're twofold. Canada has been chosen as, let's call it the guinea pig for the global reset model. And there's another Northern European country, Scandinavian country, I forgot which one, maybe, which one it is exactly, but they've been chosen as the two kind of poster child, kind of, you know, guinea pig models for this new Western agenda. So if anything, you're going to expect digital passport controls and all that in Canada before some of these other countries. Central bank digital currency in Canada, I'm sure they're working on it, but I haven't really heard much about it. I've heard more about the FedNow service, but even then there's contentions around it. Legally, the Fed as a independent organization doesn't have the legal charter to actually introduce a central bank digital currency from my research. I could be wrong, but I've seen some discussions and talks about that, and that there are some states that are actually pushing back and saying, no, you can't do this. And if you do, then we're going to introduce our own state digital currency and back up by gold. And there's actually a lot of states which are talking about that. And the big thing with BRICS is, you know, we're talking about maybe a new financial power that's emerging in an economic alliance in BRICS. But they are actually talking about going back to a gold-backed standard somehow between trades between the countries. So they are talking about gold coming back into the monetary system through these central banks. The West will not admit it, but as I've seen, and I followed gold 7-8 years, I was an expert in the space for quite a while, maybe not the last 10 years, but gold is actually coming back into the monetary system, I believe, more and more as a competing currency. So it'll be an interesting time. So we're going to have all these central bank digital currencies all come out, but, you know, it's just another fiat currency. There's no difference what they have right now. They'll just be able to control who gets what, when, and how they're allowed to spend it. And that was part of the whole COVID lockdown, was they were trying to get these relief payments out to people, and it was taking a while. So the you know, the idea now is that central bank digital currencies will be available. You can open up a direct wallet with the central bank. So for whatever reason they need to issue you out money in emergency right away, they can do that. And that's kind of the theory. I mean, there's lots of reasons why they're talking about central bank digital currencies, but these things don't happen overnight. You'll still have time. I kind of believe we'll have a two currency system for quite an extended period of time. So, for example, the U.S. dollar, as it is right now, will coincide right alongside with the central bank digital currency during a migration period. But these things take a generation to migrate over. And, you know, the younger kids, they love this technology. As much as us older people, you know, we never grew up in this technological world where it's immediate and instantaneous. You know, the younger generation now, this is their norm. They'll absorb it and adopt it easily. I think it's just going to get brainwashed into it somehow or other.
Do you see us having a completely cashless society?
Yeah, that's what they're pushing for. Like, how realistic that is, I don't know. And then, again, it just doesn't happen overnight. And Mexico, ironically, is not going to, that won't happen. You got to understand, like, most of the world outside of the Western world operates in a cash-based economy.
Yeah.
And when you have 70-80% of the economy operate there, the cash ain't going away. These are generational things that people do not give up. Now, what I do suspect is going to happen is we're seeing major paradigm shifts happening around the world in terms of job losses. Artificial intelligence is coming out strong. You have robotics, automation, automated farming. As we implement more and more tech, and tech does not slow down, so I mean, you can't expect to go backwards from tech. So as these tools and devices keep replacing humans, what do humans do? If you lose a purpose, you really lost your soul. But at the end of it, their plan is a universal basic income. Now, I don't know if I agree with 100%. Because I would be more in line with saying that it's better to teach a person how to fish than give them a fish. I would have said man, but I guess we're trying to be politically correct in today's world. So if you teach a person to fish, well, you know, it's better for it. But I do acknowledge that there are going to be some challenges over the coming decades where it's possible more and more people will be put out of work that tech can replace. But then, you know, there's certain jobs tech will never really replace.
Yeah. All right. Well, do you have any plans for the weekend, Vin?
Invited to a friend's pool party at his condo building. Who knows, go out party at nighttime on Saturday. Not really sure. We'll figure it. There's always something going on.
Sweet. And also, I keep talking about your chai, because I remember when you shared your mom's chai tea a long time ago, and I was like, that is delicious. So you clearly have, like, the scoop on the chai. Let's go.
Well, it's funny, because I make Indian food down here, too, for myself, because I missed it, and I wasn't really a good cook before, like, Indian food cook.
Yeah.
But doing beer often quite a bit, and I've kind of nailed down a couple of good dishes, and people enjoy it. So I've been sharing that with that. People keep asking me if I'm going to open up a restaurant. I'm like, nah, that's the last thing I want to do. But the chai, yeah, enjoy it.
Right. I know. I see the pictures. It looks delicious. All right, Vin. Well, is there anything that you want to finish off the conversation with? Where do people stay if they go to PV?
You know, I'm sure if you come down, there's probably flight and hotel packages that you can get bundled together. Those are probably your best options. Some are a resort package tour. That's always available. But if you're not inclined to want to stay in a resort most of the time, you actually want to get a feel for what it's like to actually live in a city that's a beach town city that's big. Then I highly suggest, you know, looking for an Airbnb in some areas and just kind of integrating yourself as many of the local expats or Mexican nationals would do.
Nice.
So, yeah, I mean, that's one thing. I mean, obviously, if people want to get a hold of me on Facebook, you can find me. It's Vin Maru, so VinMaru, or LinkedIn is the same thing. I use those two platforms the most. So, I mean, you can reach out to me there.
Great. Well, it's been great catching up. Thank you for your conversation tonight.
Yeah.